Today on Vox Talks Economics, on International Women's Day, we ask, are men really from Mars and are women really from Venus?
Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Center for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips.
And my name is Reveda Nurgozan.
On International Women's Day, we can celebrate that the gender gap in most places is closing. But it also reminds us that everywhere we look, that gap still exists. So today we are talking about research that goes some way to explaining why that might be the case, and speaking to two of the authors, Michelle Rao and Oriana Baniera of the London School of Economics. Tell me more about this, Reveda.
Of course. So it may be that outcomes for women are different because they don't have the same opportunities, but it may also be that given the same opportunities, their choices and preferences would be different.
Yeah, this is the argument that John Gray, he made in his book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, isn't it?
Are they? Depending on how true these assumptions are, gender equality policies might be different or they might not work. In 2022, CEPR published a discussion paper called Men Are From Mars and Women Too. And I spoke to Michelle Rao, one of the co-authors, about this research and its implications for policy.
I think one main takeaway that we can see from our paper on gender differences and overconfidence is really that women and men are similarly overconfident. And we also have additional papers that also show that really men and women are really not that different in terms of their preferences. So in addition to our paper on overconfidence, Oriana has a paper on women's responsiveness to performance pay. I also have a paper that looks at gender differences in altruism. And really across all three studies, we see that there's very little evidence to suggest that women are different. They are similarly overconfident, they respond similarly to incentives, and they're also similarly altruistic. And what I think is super interesting is even though the evidence really does show that men and women are very similar across all of these preferences, we also know that when we did a survey with experts, even if they were experts in the literature on behavioral or like applied economics, even experts within economics still believe that men and women are very different across all these dimensions.
So then if they are similar, does that bring us to the concept of constraints? Because women are more dominant in specific jobs and we see them less as a CEO. I work on innovations a lot. We observe that a very small fraction of women are actually inventors. So there are some issues.
What really seems to be important is that women face very different constraints than men in society. In a lot of my work, I study lower and middle income countries. And here, women are likely to be more subject to biased gender social norms. We know that legal, regulatory, institutional barriers are also larger for women. So there's a recent Women, Business, and Law report by the World Bank that finds something like in 86 countries, women face some form of job restriction. And all of these things really interact and mean that we also see that women have lower human capital and skills. They have lower access to finance and insurance markets. And as a result, we see that women are less likely to have good outcomes in terms of employment. Entrepreneurship outcomes are lower and less profitable for women. And they also perform worse in terms of businesses just because they face very different constraints in society.
I think these findings in the literature are very important. For instance, I remember a paper by Bell et al. 2019, like Who Becomes an Inventor in America? And what they find is that girls, if they have a woman role model, they're more likely to become an inventor and at the same time go into a STEM field. So what are the policies that we can apply to reduce these constraints or relax these constraints?
I think the point you make on having role models, there's definitely lots of research that shows that that's really important in terms of helping set mental models and get people to have different aspirations and beliefs about what they can actually do in the future. There's one really nice paper by Leonardo Bernstein and co-authors that also show that you can correct men's beliefs on the support for women working outside the home. A simple intervention like that can actually increase the probability that wives in Saudi Arabia have applied for jobs 4 months after the intervention. What we can take away from that is that often people talk about bias, gender, social norms as things that are very sticky. But this literature does show you that there are very actionable things that we can do to change these things. We also know that programs that are explicitly designed to target women's constraints are going to be more impactful for women. So I also have another systematic review of the impact of cash transfers on women. And what me and my co-author find is that the largest impacts of cash transfers on women's employment are really for programs that are already explicitly bundled with employment assistance and skills training. So targeting explicitly these constraints that we've talked about. I think programs should be designed with gender in mind. It sounds very obvious, but once you recognize that men and women face different constraints of society, you need to target these things when you're designing programs.
And also, I think when we talk about women in different cultures from different ethnic backgrounds or racial backgrounds, even more specific probably policies could be even more helpful. There was a paper by Seema Jayachandran, and then they were talking about money transfer or help to women in India. And some specific ethnic groups respond positively, but some of them don't. So there are really sometimes like strict norms and beliefs that you cannot even change with policy. So that means that you probably need even more specific policy or something else, maybe based on the literature, based on your experience, what are your hopes or, you know, aspirations to create a more inclusive and equitable economic atmosphere for both men and women?
I would just love to see a more diverse academic landscape. And I think there's been a lot of really important work trying to document the degree or often lack of diversity within academia and economics. So there is a paper by Anna Stansbury and Robert Schultz, which documents that economic PhD recipients are from a much narrower set of socioeconomic backgrounds than other disciplines in the US. We also know from the UK that female economists are more likely to be employed at lower academic ranks, more likely to be in fixed term. These are important issues. And there's also a lot of work now trying to think about possible solutions to this. And there's one big thing that we've already talked about is having role models, having mentoring schemes. So there's one paper, Amanda Beyer and co-authors, they have a paper which actually explicitly looks at how you can increase the presence and improve the experience of Black, Latinx, and Native American people in economics. And I think there's quite a few concrete suggestions we can take away from this. One thing I think is really important is really changing the way economics is taught and making it more relevant for people who are learning it at undergrad level. You really see through interviews with undergrads that they often feel that their first introduction to economics courses are off-putting. You hear people talk about how they don't really understand how economics can apply to problems in the real world. And I think that's a shame because economics is really interesting and can actually help us to answer a lot of really important problems. Reform is actually already happening. So at LSE, there's been a push to reform large parts of the undergraduate curriculum to try to make it closer to real life and feel less theoretical.
More examples from other economies, other countries, or more applied work?
Yeah, exactly. More applied work. I remember when I started studying economics, the first example you get is on potatoes and salad. I think economics can answer really interesting issues. What you see when people talk to undergrads, a lot of the times they don't really understand how these ideas can be applied to the real world. A colleague, a student who said something among the lines of, if they wanted to care about gender inequality or study social issues, they'll take a sociology course. I think another thing that is also happening now and is great is there's a lot of efforts to try to make the pipeline to economics PhDs less elusive. So the PhD students at LSE have started a AMP mentoring program to try to help applicants from underrepresented backgrounds to prepare the applications to economics PhD programs and really try to make some of the criteria for how you apply what is needed in the standard application more transparent and explicit to people.
These are great examples. And I hope in terms of policies, there will be micro and macro policies. And even at the university level, definitely we need more. And even for the academic staff, a lot of professors, especially women professors, they complain about the fact that they cannot send their children to a nursery at the university. They're not provided such opportunities because when they have a child, if you look at the productivity levels, it's generally the women's productivity declining rather than men. So there are important policy implications, you know, based on this research. So thank you very much for being our guest today. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. You too.
We mentioned several papers and we will add those to the description, by the way.
Rivada, one point that Michelle made early on, even the experts, the economists, the people who we would expect to know, have incorrect assumptions about this. So I was intrigued. I asked Oriana Bandiera, co-author, how they discovered this and why she thought this misinterpretation of the data was so widespread. Oriana, you surveyed experts and they score men and women on risk aversion and confidence and altruism. First of all, who were your experts?
Our experts were economists who are affiliated with CPR, basically the leading economists in Europe. We sent the survey to about 1,300 economists and we had a response rate of about 25%. That's about 350 people who responded.
Why is it important that we know the opinion of these economists?
For better or worse, the economists have a lot of influence on policymaking. People listen to economists, especially the opinion of leading academics can have quite a weight in policy debates. So their opinion matters.
Do they have the opinion that men and women have different traits, especially in confidence, which is what we're focusing on?
Definitely. Most people think that men are overconfident and women are underconfident.
You compared this to what research data tells us. So where do you find this research data? How much data is there comparing confidence for men and women?
There's actually many, many, many papers that study the question of confidence and that look at the difference between genders. So we can aggregate all these results to see what the literature says as a whole.
When they study this, what methods do these papers use to measure confidence and to test confidence?
So there are different methods. Some papers study the propensity to engage in competitions. Other papers ask a large number of questions, which are questions to which people rarely will know the answer. They're questions like, tell me the timetable of the number 22 bus from Vauxhall to Pimlico. And then they ask people to score the probability that they got the answers right. And the belief is that men tend to score higher.
Does the evidence from these papers, when you look at it in the aggregate, does it support the experts' opinion that there is this confidence difference between men and women?
It actually doesn't. That's a big surprise. Both men and women are overconfident, but women tend to be more spot on and men tend to be more overconfident. But there is no evidence that women are underconfident.
Now we have to ask why the experts have these assumptions about confidence that are not supported by the data.
I think it's the most difficult thing to do as a researcher, to look at data without prejudice. We have our mental models that we use to interpret the world. So we give more weight to facts that confirm our priors. That is, we are anti-Bayesian, so to speak. We should give more weight to facts that are against our priors. And that's what we do to aggregate the evidence here. So if you give equal weight to every fact, then the literature suggests that there is no such gap in confidence. But of course, if you notice more the results that confirm your prior, then your opinion of the literature is going to be biased.
This is not a survey of the general public. These are experts. So should this difference between what they assume and what the data tells us worry us?
I think it should. But the fact that we have a large body of evidence on these issues, and we now have techniques to aggregate these bodies of evidence, should reassure us that we can learn from the facts.
Well, let's hope we do. Oriana, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Rivada, I was interested because you made the point to Michelle that we're also not just male and female, but we have different constraints and opportunities based on where we're from, what we believe, many other factors as well. From your experience, how important is this?
Thank you for asking this question, Tim. I did my PhD in Chicago, and I'm now a research economist at the London School of Economics. And so far, I've been in many different occasions where I was not treated as an economist because of the way I look. And I've seen many people complain about many things, actually. For instance, I remember an undergrad from the University of Chicago talking about, you know, our identities, and she was complaining that she's at an even more disadvantage because she's a woman, mm-hmm. she's Black, and she's Muslim. And it's obvious that she's Muslim because she's covering her hair. So the reason why is that it's just not male or female, but it can even be more based on your race, your religion, your ethnic background, the way you look. The example regarding my life mm-hmm. was that in several occasions, it's like a gathering. And since there were many economists there, they were trying to count how many economists there are in the room. And they were counting everyone, all the men, and they were excluding me all the time. And this did not happen only once. This happened several times. And I was like, but I'm an economist too. Sometimes people may not perceive you in that role just because of the way you look. I'm comfortable sharing these things because I want these things to be better and I don't want people to make such mistakes. So that's why I want to emphasize this only like male or female, but there are other things as well.
And could that mean that there might be policies, well-intentioned policies, that are created by people who are, let's say, in the in-group, that might not work as well as they think they're going to work?
Yeah, that paper that I mentioned in my interview with Michelle, we will put that in a description, by the way.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're applying a policy, let's say, for all women within a region, it may not work for all women because there are social norms that is related to their culture or, you know, their religion or those kinds of things. And some women within that community may respond to this policy, but some may not because there are so many strict norms that, let's say, if you want them to be entrepreneurs, even if you give cash, they won't use that opportunity to become an entrepreneur. So in that regard, there will not be most of the time a homogenous reaction to these policies. So it'll be heterogeneous depending on if you're a minority, etc.
Well, thanks for that, Ruveda. I've got a feeling that as long as Vox Talks Economics exists, we will be discussing this because we should be discussing it.
Thank you very much.
The paper that we focused on today is discussion paper 16939 at CPR, and it's called Men Are From Mars and Women Too, a Bayesian meta-analysis of overconfidence experiments. Authors are Oriana Bandiera, Nidhi Parekh, Barbara Petrongolo, and Michelle Rao. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram as well. You'll find us at Vox Talks Economics.